Welcome back in, everyone, to a fabulous new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We are joined today by the director and co-writer, Stephen Houck. He's here to talk to us about his new show, Tomorrow We Love, which is part of the Factory series, and it's playing June 13th through the 23rd at the Chain Theater. Tickets and more information can be found at tomorrowwelove.com. We love anything that plays at the Chain Theater, but we are especially excited about this piece, and we can't wait to dive more into it. So let's go ahead and bring on our guest. Stephen, welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Thank you, Andrew. Happy to be here.
I'm so happy you're here. I can't wait to learn more about this piece. So why don't we dive right in? Can you tell us a little bit about what Tomorrow We Love is about?
Tomorrow We Love is a new play. I co-wrote it with my friend Jeffrey Voss. It's a comedy. And actually, you know, Andrew, this play, Jeffrey wrote it several years ago and actually produced it at Theater for the New City down on First Avenue, you know, on the Lower East Side. And wouldn't you know, the run was interrupted by the unwelcome arrival of COVID-19. And that was March of 2020. I'm sure we all remember that. And I saw the production and was very proud of what he had achieved with that. And then last year, he started floating the idea of doing a, you know, revival of the play and asked me if I would direct it. And I said, oh, wow, okay. You know, because he and I have been friends for a long time, but we've never worked together in that capacity. And I thought, oh, you know, that can get sticky. But I figured our friendship was strong enough, but I did want to work on the script. I felt like there was unfulfilled potential is the way I put it. And that's the way I thought about it. His premise was very interesting to me, his scenario, the characters that he had created, but I just felt like there was more to be gotten out of the material, both comically, whatever that is, and a serious undertone too, that I found in the material, because it's about a woman who has been the perfect 50s model of femininity and motherhood, wifehood, you know, everything that women were, quote, supposed to be in the 50s, and suffers the cliche fate of a husband who suddenly leaves her for a younger woman, his secretary. I mean, stereotypical, right? So the question becomes, how will she react to this? Will she crumble? Will she grieve? And ultimately, will she look within herself and find something truer about who she is than she ever did before when she was playing the roles that society and men especially had forced her to play? And Andrew, this was in my mind because my mother, late in her life, she's no longer with us, said to me that she had been born 1 year too early. If she'd been born 1 year later, she really would have ridden that wave of feminism, you know, that started in the 1960s. But by that time, she was married with four kids. My father was a Presbyterian minister. She was the wife of the minister. You know, her options were no longer what they might have been. It's the way she felt. And I don't think she regretted her choices, but she wondered perhaps what could have been different. So that's what I saw in Jeffrey's play and in his character, his leading character, Lainey Fairbanks. And I should mention that character is played by Jeffrey as well. So we have cross-gender casting. We have two men playing women, and we have a woman playing a man too. So we're playing with the gender in both directions. And it takes place in 1960 in a little town on the Pacific coast in California called Noble Bay. It's based in tone and approach somewhat on those, you know, those movies from the 50s, especially the ones directed by Douglas Sirk. They were Technicolor melodramas with, you know, emotions right just below the surface. Lana Turner, Rock Hudson, Jane Wyman, Imitation of Life, Magnificent Obsession. So it has that feeling to it as well. So we're really, you know, we're trying, I think we're hoping to achieve something that is funny, even silly, that is evocative of a period, and that might have something, if not original, at least thoughtful to say about women in society. And asking those questions, is this still an issue for women in our society all these years later, their ability to own their own power, own their own pleasure, to make their own choices without being unduly influenced by expectations of society and particularly men. So that's a long way of saying that we hope it's a fun little 90-minute romp, you know, that people will enjoy.
I love that. Wow, what a show you put together.
Well, thank you. I hope it comes to, you know, I hope it's everything that I want it to be. That's what you hope, right?
Yes, yes. Now, you've kind of touched on this already, but I want to dive a little bit deeper, and I'd love to know, what was the antithesis? What was the main inspiration to writing this show?
Well, Jeffrey had been in a show down at Theater for the New City with an actor named Andy Halliday. I don't know if you know Andy at all. Andy was part of Charles Bush's original theater in Limbo. And Charles, you know, really has over the decades perfected this his persona. He's a male actress, really, is what he is. And he writes plays in which he inhabits these female characters of great passion and great, well, he's really quite beautiful when he's in drag, and high drama, also based in movies from the 40s and 50s, and those grand dames of the cinematic world. And he's made a career of that and done a wonderful, and Andy was a part of his company originally and also wrote a play for himself called Nothing But Trash, in which he played a woman. And Jeffrey was in that, not playing a woman, but I think the experience really made him want to step into that role, into that tradition, if you will. You know, we also go back to Charles Ludlam from the Ridiculous Theatrical Company, who was an inspiration for Charles Bush, who was an inspiration for Andy Halliday. Now we've got Cole Escola doing O Mary, you know, off-Broadway, going to Broadway. So this tradition of men playing women, you know, in drag, as you say, has been going on for centuries, probably, at least, you know. So he wanted to do that and play the role himself. That was the original impulse on his part.
That is amazing. I love all that. Mm-hmm. So building on that, I mean, we're barreling into the opening. We're just about 2 weeks away from the show going up. What has it been like developing the piece?
Developing the piece has been so interesting. I've never written anything for anyone else to perform. I've hardly written anything for anybody else to read, but I've always wanted to do that. So when Jeffrey said, yes, okay, let's collaborate on this script, I was very excited. And the collaboration has been really a lot of fun. You know, he and I work together very, very well. We cast the show together from people that we know or people that we auditioned in some cases. We have had no, you know, disagreements about that. We put our team together through people that we have seen or know or some have some connection with. So it's been a true partnership in that sense. And, you know, we both are involved with a lot of off Broadway theater. There's a company called Tassos, The Other Side of Silence. I don't know if you, which is a gay theater company that's been around since, you know, really since Stonewall. And they have been very helpful. Mark Finley is the artistic director there. He's been very helpful with us. He's a friend. So I have felt, you know, quite frankly, I get terrified might be too strong a word, but you know, there have been moments when I'm like, holy, woo, what have I gotten myself into? Who do I think I am that I can do this, something I've never done? But I tell you, people like you, you know, and your wife and other people who are just so supportive and so genuinely generous and supportive of someone wanting to expand, someone wanting to do something new, create something that didn't exist before, you know, and as you know, it just takes a lot of energy and time and money in this city where there's so much theater, so many things for people to choose, to enter that arena with something that doesn't have a big star in it and hope that people get wind of, you know, what we're doing and come see us and hope again that we have something that's going to entertain and might even stimulate some, you know, and emotionally and mentally. So, you know, we're aiming high and we're going to do our very, very best to make this a special experience for everyone who's in it, everyone who's working on it, and everyone who comes to see it. So Tomorrow We Love, we welcome you with open arms. Please come give us a chance.
That is so wonderful. And, you know, it's a great lead into my next question, which is, what is the message or thought you hope audiences will take away from the piece?
I hope that, as I said, my mom, it was an inspiration for me. This is a bit of a tribute to her because she always encouraged me when I, you know, as an actor, I had my ups and downs over the years. My father was very practical. Well, you need something to fall back on. And he was supportive, but he was also, you know, somewhat skeptical in the way that a father, you know, probably should be. Are you sure this is what you want to do? You know, you're never going to have a 401k and blah, blah, blah. And whereas she was the one who, when I was down, would just buck me up and say, Steve, you reach for that star, grab on and never let go. You know, live your dreams. And she told me it later in her life as well. She said, you've always undervalued yourself. And I thought, Mom, so I have her voice in my head. And I hope that what people will come away from the play with is an appreciation perhaps of their mothers or the role of mothers, how women have had to contend with, you know, obstacles and naysayers men and other women, people who have tried to box them in, you know, where they had potential that they wanted to realize, but they weren't allowed to for various reasons. And I think that applies to men and women. I think all of us are living to some degree in a cage of our own making, right? We're living with limitations that we decided we had because someone said we did. We didn't want to fail. We didn't want to try and get knocked down. So it's not just women. And I'm a gay man. Jeffrey is a gay man. So we have that simpatico, if you will, you know, as gay men and women, that relationship too. And looking at our mothers with an appreciation. And I think I've always thought, I'm just going to babble here, that drag is really about men being so fascinated with female identity, female energy, and especially female power. I want to feel like what it feels like to be a woman. I'm going to put those heels on. I'm going to put that dress on. And I am going to really let my hair down, as it were. You know, as men, we're often sort of constrained, right? We have a role to play. We're not as emotional. We're not as flamboyant. We're not supposed to be as expressive emotionally as women are. So men who want to feel those things can sometimes do so by putting on a wig and a dress and some high heels and seeing what it really feels like deep down inside to be a woman with all of the power that implies, but also the struggle and the pain and the limitations that are imposed from without. So it's drama. You know, that's what I go to the theater for. I go to laugh and cry. If I do either one of those, it's great. If I do both, I'm like, I am in the presence of brilliance. If I both laugh and cry. So I'm hoping for that. That's what we're going for.
I love that answer. You hit so many great points in that. And you know, with that intention, that leads to my final question for the first part, which is, who are you hoping to have access to Tomorrow We Love?
Such a good question, Andrew, because, you know, niche theater, gay theater, there is obviously an audience of people like us, older gay men, who have the references that we do to maybe to those old movies, maybe to Charles Bush, maybe even to Charles Ludlam, you know, who will be interested in seeing, who's now going to be putting on a dress and heels and, you know, flouncing around the stage in drag. And I certainly would love to think that we could get a younger audience. We have some young people involved in this production. Our stage manager, Kat Gillespie, is 25 years old, and I'm not even sure how she identifies as non. We have a performer who's definitely does identify as non-binary, you know, so we're confronting this aspect of gender and sexuality, which is not part of the play, but I think in the best of possible worlds, it would speak to young people too, who have that kind of perspective on their identity, specifically their sexuality and their gender and their femaleness and maleness. It's very different for young people now than it was when I was growing up as a young gay man. And I'm cisgender. I'm a he, him. It never would occur to me to say to ask people to refer to me as they, but I definitely respect their choice, their freedom to define themselves as they want to, and ask everybody else to reflect that back to them and to treat them as they would like to be treated and as they see themselves. But that's that. I don't always get it right. I do a lot of but I hope I have good intentions, and I hope the play has maybe something to say to younger people as well. And I remember in the 70s coming out as being gay and having there be a certain hostility on some people's part to even acknowledge that was someone's, choice. No, it's not a choice exactly. It's an identity, an immutable characteristic, but people didn't even want to admit that that was possible, much less true. So in that sense, I can relate to people who really genuinely experience themselves as non-binary and live their lives that way. And they're discovering that, you know, every day on their own. There's no roadmap for it. You know, there's no rule book for it. Each person is going to have to make their own determinations about what's right for them. And hopefully that goes back to what we want to illustrate in the play, which is this woman who has, you know, engineered her life around expectations and fulfilling them. And she has done so, and she has benefited from that. She's comfortable. She's popular. She's wealthy. She, you know, has a very nice life, but it's all in the hands of this man who, when he decides that she's no longer the one he wants, he can take it away. And really, she has no recourse. She's at his mercy in this scenario. So she has to find her own power, make her own choices. And we do have a little, you know, not anachronistic exactly, but at one point she says to her daughter, "Oh, honey, when you're old, it's going to be the 21st century. No one will ever believe that women didn't have complete autonomy over their bodies and reproductive choices. And they laugh as if it's the most absurd thought, you know, that no, that's not actually funny right now. It's not because it's happening. And who would have dreamt that all this many years, you know, into women's liberation, women's evolution, all those things, that men would still be, you know, sitting in judgment and in authority over women's choices.
Second part of our interview, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit better, pull the curtain back, if you will. And I would like to start by asking you, what or who inspires you? What playwrights, composers, or shows have inspired you in the past, or just some of your favorites?
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. Let's see. Well, I've been an actor, professional actor, since 1982. When I graduated from college, I graduated from Trinity University in San Antonio, Texas, which had a really interesting theater department. And I got some great training, some great experiences during my 4 years there, and came out of college and sexually in 1982 and had my first job, which was the Fort Worth Shakespeare in the Park. I'm just kind of going back in my mind to, and I always, you know, something I always sang. I loved music, but I really was more interested in doing plays than musicals. But I've done, you know, musicals, as I've enjoyed doing musicals too. But I guess when I say what excites me about theater is often language and drama and the usual suspects, Tennessee Williams, Arthur Miller. Of course, for the first time I saw Angels in America by Tony Kushner, I was, you know, gobsmacked. And I actually saw part one for the very first time at the National Theatre in London. It was there before it came to Broadway. And I could not believe my eyes and ears. You can imagine, you know, the first time you see Millennium Approaches, that was everything I wanted the theater to be and everything I wanted to be in the theater. And I auditioned several times, as I recall, to play Prior Walter, the role originated by, on Broadway at least, in America by Stephen Spinella, and I never got to do it. Another play that really sparked me when I saw it on Broadway was Art. Do you remember Yasmina Reza's Art, the three guys? And I thought, this is what, it was funny, but it was also very gritty in a way. These were three men who were not pulling any punches with each other. And it was not an easy watch, because you were watching people, men who were friends, who loved each other, come to an impasse where they had to choose. They had to make a choice about what they were willing to let go of, what they were willing to give up, what they were willing to give to their friends. And I love seeing Tom Stoppard does that at his best. You know, his play, The Real Thing, I remember thinking, these are very smart people who have painted themselves into a corner intellectually, and they don't have emotional awareness of themselves or each other. So they're going to have to either explode or implode or attack. You know, that to me, that kind of high stakes emotional drama, interpersonal relationships is something that I've always been drawn to. And maybe that's, again, why I hope that our play, while it's essentially a comedy, it's even kind of a spoof. There's some silliness in it, that it does at least touch on these questions of that we all have to make, you know, these questions we ask ourselves and these choices we have to make in our day-to-day relationships, like you and your wife, or you know, are there moments when you two come to some impasse where it almost feels like, you know, this could all go away because I cannot tolerate, you know, something. And maybe you let some time go by and you go, oh, well, it wasn't as dire as I thought it was. But in the moment, it feels like it is. It feels life and death to us, you know, because our relationships with our families, with our friends are really everything to us. And we don't throw them away easily. If we do, we're, you know, it's going to catch up to us at some point. So that's a long-winded answer. Maybe it kind of answers what you said. Again, my father was a Presbyterian minister, so there's a kind of a spiritual, somewhat spiritual aspect to my, you know, worldview. But the language, ideas, and but mostly that just seeing human drama portrayed on the stage, people pushed to the limit where they cannot coast along anymore. I mean, most of I like to coast, you know, whenever possible. I want a day to go by where I thought, oh, okay, everything worked out. I didn't get upset. Nothing was terrible. But those are the moments when we grow and when we learn, right? When we crisis, it takes a crisis often to force us out of our comfort zones. So that's what, to me, the theater is. That's what I hope to be part of.
I love that. That is a brilliant answer. And it brings me into my favorite question to ask guests, and I can't wait to hear yours. And that, of course, is, what is your favorite theater memory?
You know what popped into my mind, and it often does. There are several, but I'll tell you what popped into my mind was seeing, I think in 1991 or 92, I had just moved to New York in 1990, Maggie Smith came to Broadway in a play called Lettuce and Lovage, for which I'm sure she won the Tony. And I went to see it, and I was in the, if not the back row of the balcony, the second to last row of the balcony, you know, and so way far from the stage. And I just remember Maggie Smith holding me and the entire audience in the palm of her hand. And I had never been mesmerized quite that way before. And it's a funny play. She had all those chances to do the Maggie Smith, you know, mannerisms, and to be as very arch and superior as all those things that she brought to Downton Abbey later in life. So it was funny, but it was so human and so rich and so skillful. I like to see virtuosity in acting. You know, I like to see, wow, this person really worked that bit of business out. Came along a little bit later for me when I saw Kevin Klein do Present Laughter, the Noel Coward on Broadway. And I thought, oh, here it is again, that effortless virtuosity, that skill, that shows that he worked every little moment out with the director, Moritz von Stuppnagel. I'm sure they worked together, but it doesn't look forced. It doesn't look contrived. It looks real, and yet I'm laughing my ass off. You know, again, aspiring to this marriage of technique and spontaneity. But Maggie Smith did that for me. Kevin Klein did that for me. Those two come to mind.
Wow, what incredible memories. I would kill to see Maggie Smith, Dame Maggie Smith on the stage. Oh,
right, right.
That is amazing. Thank you so much for sharing those memories.
Wow. You're welcome.
And that leads to my final question, which of course is, if our listeners would like more information about Tomorrow We Love or about you, maybe they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so?
Sure. Well, you know, I have an IMDb page. So people, if you want to see the work I've done on in TV and film, I've done, you know, I've had some good opportunities. I had a recurring part on The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel for the first four seasons, in which I played the butler, Dawes, for Jane Lynch's character, Sophie Lennon. And I was only in one or two episodes a season, but I got to work with those people, Amy Sherman Palladino, Daniel Palladino, Rachel Brosnahan, Alex Borstein, Jane Lynch, of course. That's not the question you asked, but you can check me out on IMDb and definitely go to tomorrowwelove.com, which is where all of the actor and the crew and the creative team bios are. There's a link to buy tickets, you know, through the website. I'm on Facebook, Steve Hauck, H-A-U-C-K. Somebody is welcome to follow me or message me on Facebook or Instagram, either one. I welcome that for sure. Jeffrey Vause is V-A-U-S-E. He is also on Facebook and Instagram. So we're accessible that way. And there's information about the show on the social media platforms too.
Amazing. Well, Stephen, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today. This has been such a joy. The show sounds absolutely amazing. So congratulations on it. I wish you nothing but success. And thank you so much again for your time.
Thank you, Andrew. I really appreciate it.
My guest today has been the incredible director and co-writer, Stephen Hauck, whose production Tomorrow We Love is part of the Factory series and playing June 13th through the 23rd at the Chain Theater. You can get your tickets and more information by visiting tomorrowwelove.com. We also have some contact information for our guests, which we'll be posting on our episode description as well as on our social media posts. But make sure you head over right now to tomorrowwelove.com. Get your tickets for this fabulous show. Once again, it's Tomorrow We Love playing June 13th through the 23rd. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies, and keep talking about the theater.
In a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.